Welcome to the Property Lovers Podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Grubisher. This podcast series is all about giving you a competitive edge in your property journey. We'll be discussing little known strategies, tools, and information to help you add value and create wealth through property. Now, obviously, we don't know you or your unique position, so this is not financial or investment advice. It is information of a general nature, and you should always seek professional advice as to your situation before you ever invest in anything. But if you want to play a bigger game in property and want to use property as your vehicle to create wealth and, more importantly, freedom, then you're in the right place. Let's do this. Let's get started. In this podcast episode, I'm going to talk about my personal tips and tricks when it comes to flipping properties. We did a survey of our property lovers community recently, and like over 80% of you want shorter term profits, like within 6 to 10 months. And that traditionally would mean flipping a property. There's two ways you can get it in such a short period, because don't forget, when you buy a house and buy a property, it takes a while from the day you make your offer to purchase it to when you actually get possession of it can be a couple of months. And then even if you were to turn around and sell it straight away, there's got to be a marketing period, and you've got to get photos and you've got to wait for offers. So even if you bought it really quickly and sold it really quickly, you're still looking at 2 to 3 months just on executing a purchase and a sale. And then if we add the uncertainties in between there, like how long will it take you to find a buyer and your due diligence period and all of that, it's even the fastest flip end to end is going to take 3 months or so. So when we talk about flipping properties quickly, you've always got to allow 3 months to 10 months, depending on what you're doing to it. The great thing about it is the more you change a property, provided you don't overcapitalize, the greater your reward. So if I'm just going to put in some new carpet and a lick of paint, then I'm probably not going to get much more than what I bought it for, unless I bought it really well and I bought it under market, and just with a few cosmetic changes and a bit of a spruce up, I can get my money back and then some. In other circumstances, you may have to create something different. And the greater the difference, the more your profit usually. So if there's not much difference, if it's cosmetic, in other words, just new kitchens, new bathrooms, make it look far nicer, a bit of landscaping, then you can expect 5 figures, maybe 6-figure profits if you're lucky. But the more you do, like knocking out walls, adding bathrooms, adding bedrooms, adding a second story, as with anything, the more you spend, the greater the change or difference in the end product, the greater you can achieve on your sale price, and the greater your profit. However, it's a slippery slope, because the more reward, as we know, the more risk. So the bigger the job in the renovation, the more margin for error, the more costs can blow out, the more the economy can change in a longer period of time, and so on. So let's put all that in perspective, and I'm going to give you my top 10 tips. So number one is, what do you actually do? What do you need to do to get maximum return on investment? Because remember, don't get emotional about it. The more you put in may not get you a return. I could get beautiful Italian marble because I love it, and I could spend, you know, $50,000 on marble. It needs to add more than $50,000 to the end sale price. I know it's obvious, but are people going to come in and say, wow, this is better than the other house I saw because of the marble, so I'm going to pay an extra $60,000. Therefore, I've made $10,000 on that investment. Now, there are some properties that just won't warrant it. In fact, some properties you're better off just cleaning it up. We had a client once who realized that it was a main road on a corner, didn't want to overcapitalize. They were unsure, but it was a diamond in the rough, but it looked terrible. Car wrecks on the front lawn, overgrown. All they did was get a skip bin, clean it out, tidy it up, mow the lawns, and they sold it to someone else to build their dream home. That sort of transaction is one where they mitigated their risk to the downside by not spending too much money. If it didn't sell, they had options. They could renovate it after that. But sometimes if you're going to spend $100,000 on a renovation and it's going to add $100,000 to the value of the house, like dollar for dollar, it may not be worth it. So first question to ask is, will the renovation and the amount you're going to spend on it add value? We once had a property where we looked at putting a second story on. It would have views from a second story. It would have been nice. But to put a second story on would have cost about $400,000. And guess what? Putting a second story on would have added $400,000 to the sale price we could achieve. But there was a time lag, the time value of money in that. We're sinking $400,000. It would take, you know, close to a year to do. And it wasn't really going to make the house exceptional. You would have distant district views and it would have been nice, but standout and worth the risk? No. So what did we do there? Just tidied it up and we styled it. Don't forget, styling can add value. You can have an older house and put a nice furniture package in so that people can start to see what it could be. Don't spend money you don't need to, that you're not going to get an ROI on. Don't waste money, though, even on styling, if it's structural or nothing. For example, if you've got, we had once a two-bedroom beach house, so it was just a shack. There was no point. I was thinking I'll put in a new kitchen, bathroom, like it was 1930s stuff. But what was the point in renovating a two-bedroom cottage? Whoever bought it would buy it for the land and the views, and they'd knock it down and start over. So why would I even put a furniture package in to sell it? That was just completely sell it as the land with the plans for the end product and let someone else do it. The other thing that you've got to be careful of is where you are building in a market. So if everything in a market is selling for between, let's say, $600,000 and $700,000, you do not want to be going for the record price in the street to get your money back. You don't want to be saying, oh, but mine's better than everyone else's. So the top price is $700,000, but I know I can get $800,000. Nor do you want to be building something for $400,000 when everyone's paying between $600,000 and $700,000. You want to build to the middle of the market. What are most people looking for? If they're looking for four-bedroom family homes, then that's what you want to deliver. You don't want to deliver an eight-bedroom mansion with a 10-car lockup garage if that's not what they're looking for in the area. Nor do you want to have a little one-bedroom studio granny flat on a separate title. So think of your end market. Who's going to those open for inspections? There are things that you can do that needn't cost the earth. I call this cosmetic, or like a Botox for property. So you can paint tiles, you can change cupboard handles to update things, and you can paint kitchen cupboards as well. You can keep kitchen carcasses and just replace the doors or the outside. Another good strategy in Australia especially is almost an extra room, that idea of the outdoor room that Jamie Durie popularised in Australia. So putting in bifold doors can add massive value and appeal, but not be very expensive, especially because they'll fit on the tracks of 1970s slider doors. Obvious one, change floor coverings. Carpets can be ripped up and floorboards can be polished. And don't forget window dressings. I know it seems obvious. I've sold properties before where I've thought, oh, look, the buyer can put their own touch. I'll just give them a blank canvas. You know what they do? They walk in and the first thing they say is, oh, the neighbors are close. Oh, there's not much privacy. And you think, they don't have curtains. Put your own curtains or blinds in. Sometimes you just have to do it for them. And blinds are extraordinarily cheap. You can get them at Spotlight or Bunnings for next to nothing. So put something around to soften the windows and give them a feel for what it'll be like. It doesn't have to be a full-on renovation, but there are touches that you can make where they can't use their imagination. Update tapware rather than a whole bathroom. Be very careful, though, not to personalise. Have you ever walked into a cluttered house when you're looking for open for inspections and there's photos everywhere of their children, and there's, I once inspected a property and it was tenanted, and the tenant had hung all their underwear across the lounge and living room. People were walking through the property having to like duck under grandma's underpants, and it just turned everybody off. So people don't like to intrude into someone else's space. And there are some properties that make you feel like that. Or maybe you've been to an Airbnb and you just feel like you're squatting in someone else's house or sleeping in someone else's bed. It doesn't have that hotel feel. And same for a property that you've renovated. You want someone to come in and be able to visualize themselves there. So neutral tones are great, grays, whites, beiges, and not like hot pink feature walls because pink's your favorite color. I know it's obvious, but you'd be surprised what happens out there. Add a wow factor. You can add little touches really cheaply. So think of designs. Go on to Pinterest or wherever, get design books and see what you can copy. You've probably seen those McMansion streets where they're cookie cutter homes, where they're all identical. But if you've got one that has some sort of water feature or something that sets it aside, that can be a real game changer. We once had a property where we put a water feature in the front. It was a beachside suburb, but it wasn't near the water and it didn't have a view. It was on the flat. But by having that feature there and the sound of trickling water and glass at the front door where you could see the water, you still felt connected. It had that beachy feel. And it didn't cost very much either to do. When you're dealing with trades, your first price is usually your best price. So strike the price and don't make changes. Measure twice, cut once. We once negotiated with a plumber. We cut a deal. He started work. And then I decided I wanted the toilet move it slightly to the left to allow for a cupboard to be put in there. And I asked, what will that cost? Will that cost any more to do it? And I think, say, the quote was $5,000. And he said, look, $5,500. I thought, look, $500, I still want it moved. Turned out it was $5,500 just to move the toilet. So it was $10,500 on a $5,000 quote. My bad. I should have asked better questions and got on top of it. But more than that, I should have made sure my specs and my instructions were clear and I got the quote and then asked for the work without changing my mind midstream. Because builders are always going to give you their best quote to be competitive and win the job. Once they've won the job, any changes are their chance to claw back the discounts that they gave you. And after a while, you'll build a dream team. So you will have a team of trades that can follow you property to property and guard them fiercely. I know in the property lovers community, we say we all share and I love sharing, but sometimes you overshare. I once lost the best painter ever by referring him around. They were so cheap, a father and son team. And then I could never get them when I needed them because everyone else was using them. And then supply and demand, their prices went through the roof. Have a think about, and I know this sounds really sexist, but I can't help it. It's what sells. What's right is what works. Okay. So forgive me for saying this, but often the woman has the casting vote. So feminine touches can make a difference. In other words, if you've got a spare room and you're not sure what to do with it, probably don't make it a pool room or don't put a 1970s bar in there to have the blokes over on a Saturday night. Do something that would be more appealing to the homemaker, because I know that I personally buy houses because of their kitchens and their bathrooms and what I can see the family doing there. The emotional side of it, the entertaining areas. If I see a house with a pool room or a bar or a darts or a whatever, it's kind of like a turn off. And I'm already thinking, oh, I have to spend X dollars to turn this into a rumpus room for the kids. Get stuff at online auctions like Grays Online. You can buy some great stuff for your builds and your renos without paying top dollar. And when you go to sell, remember that your first offer will usually be your best offer. We get emotional about our own handiwork. And I've learned the hard way that when I have my first open for inspection, first person through the door makes me an offer that's in the range that I thought, And then I say to the agent, wow, we had 15 people through. It's only the first day. I'm going to wait till next week and the week after. And my family gets in my ear saying, oh, don't give this one up. Oh, it's so beautiful. You'll get top dollar. No, the longer it sits there, the worse it gets. So if you get a competitive offer where it, you want it to be, don't worry about the timing of the campaign. Just work on numbers. Don't get emotional. And make sure you build to fit in with the area. If there's lots of Hamptons homes, don't build a modern eyesore. If it's, you know, city living, don't build a country comfort sort of house. And finally, don't buy anything with drawbacks. There are some things you can't renovate away. So if you see a property and you think, oh, it's a bit close to the railway lines, or oh, I don't like those power lines overhead, or wow, that's a really busy main road there. If that's your first impression, that's going to be everyone else's first impression. And you pay a big price for that. It's going to be harder to sell. Because if you imagine out of 100% of people who go and look at the property, 80% are going to be turned off by the things that you couldn't wallpaper over or renovate away, like a major flight path. So you've got a much smaller demographic that is going to be driving the demand for that property. And they're probably people just settling and taking it warts and all. You don't want to have something with drawbacks. Buy the best that you possibly can. So go with your gut. That's it. They're my top tips for flipping properties. If you want to know more about how to make big profits, I'm talking 5 or 6 figures in a short space of time, you might want to consider coming along to our 1-day property challenge. That's where we go through the 6 F's, which is find a property, feasibility it, fund it, and then look at formulating an offer, those 4 steps. By the end of the day, you'll have an offer on a property with 5 to 6 figure profits in it. And the last 2 F's are to fix it and then flip it. And you can then go on and do that. It's all about speed and momentum. So we're holding our next 1-day property challenge on the 22nd of April. Don't worry, we give you the software, we give you everything you need to find the deal on the day, to run the numbers. We'll look after that. What you got to do is meet us halfway and turn up. So give us 1 day and we'll give you a deal on the 22nd of April. You can go to the links in the comments and description section and click there to register for that challenge, and we'll get you sorted with your software, and can't wait to see you on the day. If you're enjoying this podcast, don't forget to leave us a review and follow us so that you never ever miss an episode. Here at Property Lovers, we've got a big mission to help people who are serious about property start getting outcomes and profits to match their passion. It's not easy, but it is simple. It will require from you focus, commitment, and action. But over the last decade, supporting property entrepreneurs, we found that 80% of results come from how you start. You see, you need to get off to a sizzling start. It's all in the launch and the velocity around the start. And the rest is pretty much autopilot if you start right, follow through, and just stay on course. That's why we created our 5-day challenge, to work through a funnel to get you deals. So step one is find the deal, which we set up through artificial intelligence software. So it's made sure that it's for your strategy and desired outcomes. And we do all that and build that together on days 1 and 2. By day 3, you'll have about 100 leads in your hopper, both coming on market and from off market. And you'll be able to consider them. And that's where we move to step 3. And that's where we run them through a feasibility filter. Notice the F theme here. Find feasibility. And the next step is to formulate the deal and the offer. That comes on day 4, where we get our offers ready. And next step is we look at ways, finally, left to fund them using other people's money, so it's none of your money. So that's 80% of the hard work done then and there. By day 5, you'll be submitting offers. And that's it for the challenge. Then it's over to you to fix up these properties properties. That's the fifth F, fix, and finally flip them for a quick payday. So if you want to get off to a flying start, you can go to the link in the notes section and sign up for our 5-day property challenge. Just 1 hour a day over 5 days, or all in one session if you're committed, and you'll be off to a start on your property journey with leads, funding, everything you need, and the software at your fingertips. And for any other questions that you might have around property and all your property needs, visit our website, propertylovers.com.au, because we're here to support you on your property journey and give you a real competitive advantage with the right knowledge, support, and systems to achieve your financial goals. That's it for today, but really looking forward to giving you more tools, more strategies, more support, and a competitive advantage when it comes to property in our next episode.